Mike and Miana gather playing some games. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana gather playing some games. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R.
Everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 11 of Survivor 42. My name is Mike Bloom, back to see a super tense vote out, followed by maybe a not so tense, in fact, like a most celebratory exit from the game of one of its biggest players. Of course, we are talking about that epic final seven episode, vote, game, challenge, etc. And I have assembled quite an epic panel to break it all down. First off, she is certainly a flame in a box, and that she lights up any podcast that she's on. Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm doing well. I got rained on my bike ride here to record the podcast, so I think I'm like totally in the mindset of Survivor, you know, like cold, soaking wet, shivering. Mm-hmm. I'm in there with them. I can totally empathize, so can't wait to break it all down.
How many toenails do you have left?
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, no. All right, well...
An annual amount, let's just say.
I was waiting for Marianne to do like a PSA, like 40% of people lose 2 to 3 toenails in a year. I don't know, maybe people need more calcium. But I am incredibly excited to bring on this guest. You know, this week was do or die, but I feel like I done and died and gone to heaven to be able to talk to this person. She's co-host of Off Book, a musical podcast on Earwolf, as well as making her appearances across many different podcasts, TV shows, movies, etc. Been a while, but we're always happy to have her back. The great Jess McKenna. Jess, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Wow. Good intro.
Thank you, Owen Wilson. This is showing up here for a
while. Happy to be here. Happy to be here to talk about an episode that seemed to genuinely tickle Jeff.
to the point where he makes a PSA at the end, like, God, isn't this great?
Isn't this what it's all about? Playing hard and then being friends. I was like, yeah, Jeff.
I think between that, the challenge, today's challenge, it's a dangerous one. The twist, all of that. I mean, it was really just getting in his jimmies, you know?
Mm-hmm. So this I could understand why he would call fun. Last week, again, not so much. This I would more understand is like, today's fun. That would make more sense than, again, starting in this like frigid cold water and carrying a bean bag across a balance beam.
He's got a twisted definition of fun, I think.
It really does seem like one of the worst weather years. I don't know. Maybe I just have recency bias, and maybe just because of the less rice stuff, I'm like, I do feel like I am being let in on more just day-to-day pain and struggle.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how much that adds to the game for me, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's
tough.
So many other shows now. I mean, obviously they are spun off of what Survivor started, but I feel like they do it in such a different way that hasn't the game evolved that it's much more just about the game, like, than surviving the elements. I don't know. To me, I don't know if it's added as much. This 41 and 42, they don't get rice. We take their flint. I feel like it's just added, made for a lot of, sad interviews.
People being like hungry, cold, and sad.
Yeah, just like really, really, really demoralized. And I think it's already pretty hard, you know, like,
yeah, it's tough because like I think it was a bit of a push for them to be like, well, we're only going 26 days, and they like set up their own straw man to be like, I know what people are gonna say, it's an easier game, well, we're gonna make sure that's not it. So
right.
You get a spoonful of rice every day, but five people have to sit out the challenge for it. That being said, I was more appreciative of it, I think, this season than last season. And one of the major reasons why I adored this episode is at least one thing that factors into the misery is that sometimes the misery comes out through the interpersonal relationships. And we saw that in this episode, right? That like Romeo, probably just completely spent in general, is now just becoming a sloth around camp and getting on people's nerves. The exact opposite is Jonathan, who is like now expending all his energy, but complaining about it. And that's getting on people's nerves. So that was one of the many elements I liked about this, was like how because of the way people were behaving at camp, it affected the strategy rather than what we're used to with the post-merge, which is just like strategy, strategy, strategy.
Yes, that Romeo cut, I was like, this is such a drag. Like, this editor is not doing this poor guy any favors. Just the intercut between people doing their impressions of the way he scoops the rice, and then so many examples of him scooping the rice, and maybe also just like, obviously they're in a bubble, but I'm like, in a post-COVID world, watching someone's hand in that bowl over and over again scraping, I was just like, this is so viscerally gross. And between that and the toenail, I was like, this episode has a little bit of some ick. But I agree, Mike, overall, I really loved this episode. It was so like high octane, as one person described a touring production of Fame that I saw as a child. And I was like, what does that mean? My mom was like, high energy.
Was this like a NASCAR reviewer was sent to go review theater for one
night? I remember it was like one of those things where you can buy a show poster at the end that's signed by the cast for charity. And I was like, Mom, I want to get one. So I had a signed poster of a touring production of Fame. And it just said at the top, like, high octane.
Maybe that's how we should start marketing the podcast, Mike. Like the B&B, yeah. High octane.
Yeah, but it's less so high octane, and it's more so like when you get sugar in your gas tank of just like, it's not exactly running completely right. In fact, people are wondering why the wheels are on at all, but it's still running. You could probably get a few more miles out of it.
Before it totally breaks down.
Yeah, so Liana, what did you think about the episode overall?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I thought it was fun because I think we did get a lot of camp life because some of the strategy was motivated by that. But then we also got to see the strategy with Drea bringing up the fact that, ooh, I have the opportunity to steal Mike's idol, telling it to Omer, who then we get the sort of genius style reveal at the end where he's, you know, we don't know. Did he tell Mike? Did he not tell him? Does he have his idol? Or is, you know, Drea going to be able to steal Mike's idol? So I thought that that was really fun. So because we had so many different elements, I thought that it worked really well together to make for a complete breakfast, if you will, Survivor.
Like 90s breakfast commercial. Like we have the orange juice and the toast.
Yeah, exactly.
So Jess, we even expanding outwards from this episode, we haven't gotten your thoughts since it's been a while on, you know, not only this season, but like the new era. I guess outside of the limited diet options amongst the castaways, what are you thinking about Survivor in the 2020s?
Well, I think that 42 is running a lot better than 41 did. I think there was a lot in 41 that they were doing to try to convince the fans that like these changes would be good. To your point, Mike, they seemed like they were always trying to like get out ahead of the criticism. You know, like, here we go, we're dropping the four, we're keeping the one. And I think because 40 was such a, to me, a very successful season, a like joyful, incredible season, it feels right for them to try to like keep it fresh and make some changes. But I think the changes are working a lot better in 42. I think the show itself just knows what it's doing a little bit more, even though they've kept a lot of the same pieces. There's something about the way that they're being explained to the audience or treated to the audience that just feels a little bit more in the pocket for me. I think that the casting of this season is really amazing. I think like it's just, no matter what they try to do of twists and turns, if you don't have good people, it doesn't really matter. I think 41 had some great players too, but I think that there's just a really good balance of dynamics in 42. Mm-hmm. I like that even players who want to play a little bit more old school style, like a Mike or a Jonathan, who want to like Mike really rely on traditional loyalty, or Jonathan rely on traditional providing around camp and being a challenge beast, that they still... Well, Jonathan's not amazing at strategy, but he at least knows that it matters versus like sometimes those players are like, this is all I need to do. He knows that he needs to make moves. And Mike, too, I think is a great player for being still a representative of a slightly old school approach of not liking when people lie to you. Even you can see in his like joyful goodbye with Drea, he's no slouch. He's not playing like some sort of dad game. He's like a great player who has a good attitude about like respecting the gameplay. I just think it's a really good cast. So I like some of the changes. I think they've relaxed some of the camera work of like something else in 41 is sometimes we're going to like be more on a steady cam with, with Jeff talking right to you. And I get it. Like, the his relationship with the fans has evolved. And obviously, like, so many seasons, it's so long. There's so many players now who grew up with the show that I think that that, like, shorthand with the audience makes sense. But I just think some of the, that camera work is on a technical level a little bit more relaxed in this one. There's not a game within a game that I guess nobody played. You know, it's just like, they good for them for not sitting on their laurels, but I feel like we're seeing it pay off a little bit better in 42 so far.
Are there any twists in particular or advantages or anything like that that either you like or maybe don't like that they've implemented this season?
Well, I think that we'll see that they, some of them don't have legs, that like they benefit from the fact that 42 couldn't watch 41. This thing of saying weird phrases, obviously you can't keep that, because now a viewer will be like, why do they say that thing? Why'd they say that thing again about a rabbit in the mailbox or whatever? Like, you're going to instantly know, oh, she has an idol. So obviously they'll have to like go back to the drawing board for another way to trigger idols. I think the like sands of time, the one person, I think that's
Oh, I love that. I love calling it that. That's just so poetic.
Yeah, I prefer that as well. Just because I think we were just calling it the hourglass or like
shorthand. Yeah.
Like reversing the thing. I don't know. And I think that exiles are tricky because I don't want that person to have such a loss of momentum. I don't know. Those are always tricky. I'm not always against them, but they're not my favorite. And I just think that that one gets like built up as this huge thing. And just because it ended up being played by the winner of 41 doesn't mean that the challenge itself has, or the twist itself has impact. I like some of the advantages having to be shared. I think that that's interesting because it's a forced secret that maybe doesn't get, that maybe makes people have to work together in a way that they wouldn't want to. I think that one's pretty cool. And I don't mind there being like buyer beware stuff, because all these people are definitely just going to go for it. Like, everyone out here is a game head. So I like that. I think that those have been compelling.
What do you think about the do or die? I guess the more like most recent thing that we saw, because now we've seen it twice. I guess even a larger question is like, is that something like the phrases that we might not see again? But what are your thoughts in general about this idea of like, you can risk getting in the challenge because if you're the first out, then you have a 1/3 chance of going home by a random draw.
Well, I think I like it. I think the one in season 41 was a more like ball based challenge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like holding that.
This one was so clear of, I wish that they would make those challenges more of like a classic mix them up of there's a physical part and then there's a mental part. So more people would be perhaps like enticed to think that they would at least not be the worst. Standing on that pole with especially them not having food and their weather that they've been through, like, of course everyone is just gonna say, I can't do this challenge.
It's a good point. I know that like Robin Bryce brought it up as well. I think you'd have to tweak it slightly where with endurance you could very easily map it to be okay, first to step down has to do it. In this case, you'd have to run through the entire challenge, right, to be like, okay, the last person to finish the challenge, which feels maybe a bit more in the schedule of like the challenge than Survivor, but I don't think it's exactly out of the picture. And I agree with you. It would incentivize more people. Whereas here, right, everyone else looked at Jonathan and Lindsay and are like, one of the two of them is probably going to win anyway. So like, let me just yada yada through
it. Yeah, like I cannot risk it. What if I slip on that tiny thing? Like, and then also I wasn't really familiar with the Monty Hall problem. That was, so I looked it up with 41. And so it's just crazy that statistically both of these people have done the quote wrong thing and been right.
I was debating this. I was like, do you think Jeff has one of those boxes where you can like hold part of it when you open it and then you could hold like either the top or the bottom?
The false. No.
Yeah.
My like prevailing theory throughout all this stuff with the do or die, I think Jeff wants people to die. not from like depleting them of rice, but like, he loved when Ceree got eliminated from Game Changers. Like, he loves these unconventional eliminations where people take a risk. I have to imagine he wanted at least one of those times for someone to go out that way. Like, I think it'd be a little too big brain for him to be like, all right, we're going to spare him both times just to spook him a little bit.
I agree. But it's just wild because
yeah.
I think the do or die has been cool. I'm interested to see like how it continues to be paired with what challenge. And it did, was this the exact same timing as they did in 41?
Yeah, both at the final seven.
It's pretty compelling. I wouldn't do it any later because that feels like too much and too close to what we've only had the fire challenge for what, like 5 or 6 seasons at this point. Yeah. I feel like you don't want to get too close to this other thing that we've only recently incorporated where you're gaming who to take and the fire and all that. So it's probably about the right timing. What do you two think? Do you like it or not like it?
I think it's tough to have someone's game completely up to chance, but the fact that they get to decide whether or not they want to compete, I think then that makes it fine for me because they are given a choice.
Right.
And the way that Jeff describes it, I mean, like, it's so intense. Like, they know, you know what I mean? So
totally.
Yeah. They know the gravity.
If it was pure chance, it'd be pure trash. But I think because you have to choose and you get to see what the challenge is. I wouldn't like it if you were like, will you do the challenge? Well, we don't know what it is. Like, I like that people get to assess their skills, get to understand and look at, and it's far enough into the game that they know what everybody else is capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And now you might be in your head like, well, I'll probably at least outlast Romeo or something.
Yeah. So I think it's a fun risky idea. I think one of my hangups is I just don't like really in any of these reality shows where like there's nothing inherently broken to the structure, but they feel like for whatever reason they do like, all right, for this round, things are a little bit different. Like this, the Fire for Fire Making is a great example of that. I'm not a fan of that. There was in this most recent season of Survivor South Africa, they did something called Tied Destinies where like they were randomly paired up and like you competed as a pair, you won as a pair, you got voted out as a pair. Like, I'm just not a huge fan. I don't find it necessary to be like, all right, we're going to shake things up for this round. You know, this isn't like, you know, incorporating something new into your weekly meal rotation. You know, this is a formula that doesn't necessarily need to be broken, in my opinion. So I'm not like completely mad at the execution of it, especially this time around. I completely agree with you both that I think there was a good amount of information out there for them and us. I remember last season when we watched it, and then we find out like, oh, Deshaun came in last, he's going to be up. And then they were sitting talking at camp like, well, if Deshaun wins the game, he's safe. And we're like, what? That they did not tell us that. And then, yeah, right. I guess if you win the do or die, you're safe. Having that extra information for both us and the players helps. I just sort of question the necessity of it overall. But if we have to have it, I guess I'm glad we have it in this form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, I mean, like, I think that's true. But I think you know, long ago they introduced idols, you know, and the game would be nothing without idols. So eventually they might like land on a twist that now we can never unsee it being like part of what makes Survivor great. And I think that the challenge is too many players are fans. So there's like, you have to keep them a little bit in response because otherwise they think they know, like even the fact that they're like, okay, an idol's back in the game because they always put it back, you know, like, okay, there's usually one at each camp. Okay. It's even that amount of game awareness, I think over time will chip away at the spontaneity of the game. So I think that they have to do some things to make sure that there are some things that the players can't have sat on their couch and watched 40 seasons of prep work to be like, well, statistically, this person, you know, even we all know the way that they talk about the game of like, I need to have a shield for this long. Eventually, you got to make sure you have like, enough people in the cast who don't agree with playing that way or don't want to play that way or are less game heads or more just like, my mom said I would be good at this, you know. But then, I don't know, those people end up not being very good because they don't know how to play. They don't know how to play with everybody else because too much of the cast is like, I love the show. I've been watching it. The show is like huge for me, which I love because it means you get big plays. So I don't know. I guess I disagree. I think that if they don't occasionally tweak the structure, we're going to get players who are just too ahead of what's happening. I think potentially. But I also liked in this case that Lindsay had to sort of reflect on her own like competitive nature being the reason why she went for it. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And that was like a nice piece of human dimension to that move and that choice. The fact that she was like kind of kicking herself versus I sort of feel like by the time Deshaun did it, he was just like, my game is in chaos anyway. Like, who cares? Lindsay's like on the upswing and was like, why did I do it? So, you know, it's compelling. And obviously won her some respect from other people, but she was even being honest of like, no, that was absolutely the wrong call, which I thought was great. I think that's great for her story to be like, I shouldn't have done that, you know, cause I think that's someone on the jury could throw that back at her. So I think it's great. She was already like, nope, that was bad.
Yeah. I think, okay. There's so many interesting points. No. I love it.
Again, we're the rambling car full of sugar and our gas tank.
We're just trying to make it to the
high octane.
No, I like that concept. It actually makes me think of like, this is in like video gaming, but there's like player versus player modes and there's player versus environment mode. So like PvP versus PvE. And I kind of feel like all those twists, that's like the environment, like you're changing up the environment. And so the players are having to respond to all of that versus just bare bones season. You just have really dynamic cast members. You're relying on that, you know, player versus player sort of for all of the intrigue. So to find a good balance and a good mix of those two elements, I think is really what the show should strive for. And I think that that's something they are working on, which is like, you know, because you want an interesting cast and you also want the right amount of element dynamics, because either way it could be boring. So yeah, I totally get with the like kind of testing things out, but you got to find that balance. And I think that's something that the show is still now working on in this new era of Survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
we had what? So we had the Hourglass, normal round, Split Tribal Council, normal round, Do or Die, normal round. And then we get into the finale. So that's the thing as well, is I'm not into, like, I don't hate it, but at the same time, it also feels tough in that it does feel like every other episode is like, okay, something's up. I do think trying to sprinkle it a little bit more throughout the season, because again, like pre-merge, we barely had anything. And that was great because that allowed us to like relationships to organically develop and like some advantages to be gained. And then it's like to feel like, okay, we need to start changing it up every other round when arguably this should be the most exciting portion of the game to begin with. I mean, again, without the do or die twist, there were still these really fun moments, right? Where it's like, and I love Mike now just like fully Breaking Bad of being like, my word's my bond. Drea, I'm working with you. And he turns around like, I'm not working with Drea anytime soon. It's no, I'm not doing that at all. It's just like, he doesn't even care, which might, unfortunately, I think, lead to some bad stuff for him, I feel like, if he makes it to the edge of the game. I think he has realized that you can't really do that, but I think because he keeps saying he's going to, that's really going to reflect badly on him.
Yeah, it could. I sort of feel like when everyone is on the receiving end of one of those talks from Mike, that they're going, okay, Dad, like because they're all younger and they're all a little bit more game head. I think that I think it could, because it's just like, hey, if that's what you say you're doing, say what you mean and do what you like, versus everybody else who's like, I'm playing the game. I like you. You trust me right now. You know that I'm probably lying, and we all sort of agree. But I think, yeah, when you set yourself up as telling the truth and then when you start to break it, then that's a little tricky. But I do sort of feel like everybody's reaction to it is like, sure, Mike, we'll see how long you can keep that up. Because I think he is so genuinely likable as a person that I think there's a lot of, and he's not like an old dud. He's like exactly, he's so well cast as the person who's going against only playing backstabby, but still likes a little bit of gameplay and a little bit of intrigue, and you can watch him like fall in love with it like everybody else has. He's like, actually, it's kind of fun if I make Drea feel safe. You know, I think like that's really great. He wouldn't be my pick for winner, but I think I've really liked him, and I think he's like really amazing casting because he offers a little bit of pushback, but he doesn't feel like he's playing a game from 30 years ago. He feels like he's still in the modern game enough to the, like speak the language and bring his own thing to it. And he was just that family challenge. He was, my friend and I were talking about how like he insisted that Lindsay and Omar narrate their own pictures too. Cause his reaction is like, oh, that's Chelsea. Look at Chelsea's a little baby. Oh, you know, like he's calling out who all the people are. And then sometimes like Lindsay's like maybe just watching it and taking it in, and he's like, tell us who they are. Which I found so endearing and also like helpful for the viewer, where she's like, well, that's my dad. He goes, ah, you know, like
I do want Mike as one of those behind the camera producers, like, tell us about the challenge.
I know that's what I mean. He's a very helpful, he's very good casting, he's very helpful to the show in multiple ways, just as like a reality persona. I think he's he's doing a lot he's giving us the like, oh, you know what? I like talking about other religions. It's good. And like, you're like, yeah, thanks, Mike. Where you're just sort of like, yeah, this is so like sweet and of another time, but also like good for Mike, I guess. I don't know. Like, you know, where he's right on that line of you being like, yay, okay, okay. Like, it's almost where you're going to be like nervous. He's going to step in it, but he doesn't. And so you're like, okay, all right. All right, Mike, you know, like, it just feels, he feels like perfect casting to give you a sprinkle of that component.
I mean, Mike has had such an interesting arc. If we think about that, like, very first tribal council where he gets betrayed and is like, you backstab me, I'm never trusting you ever again, to then being like, well, I can't backstab, you know, Roxroy because I gave him my word, to now making these fake final fives and going to Omer being like, I hope I didn't overstep my bounds, you know, like going too far. It's so funny to watch him. Yeah. Like you said, Jess, pick up that strategy and start to get that taste of what it's like to lie and to backstab and to really, even though initially it was not his strategy, to really embrace it. It seems like 100%.
Yeah.
And I think whereas he was like mad at High for the lie that Omer said of, he
the
called
puppet
you his puppet
thing or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Where he was so mad at High. I think he was like, his genuine delight with Drea putting another vote on his name. I just was like, this is the best. I was with Jeff. I was like, this is totally, that would be if I've always said, and it would be very hard for me to pull off because I'm sure I would be so emotional, but I always love when people on their exit are just like, yeah, good game. Mm-hmm. Like that would be my goal, is to play like that where I could try to not take it personally as much as possible and appreciate that what I like about the game, someone just played and that's great. And it's only a compliment to you if people vote you out, typically, unless it's like early and you're bad at challenges or something. But if you're at this point, it's because someone thinks you're good. And to be able to be like, okay, great, we did it, woo-hoo. Like, I love that so much. I know I would probably just like sob and be like, I can't believe you did that to me. And then have to like later be like, okay, now that I've had a cheeseburger, I'm able to understand.
So I want to use that to segue actually into talking about Drea. I don't know. I found it so interesting. And I think Drea actually pointed this out herself to me when I interviewed her, that it felt like we saw an entirely different side to her once the votes came in for her. Like, what I've loved about Drea throughout the season is like how blunt and straightforward she is. I compare her to like the April Ludgate to Marianne's Andy, essentially, of just like, nope, that's not it. I'm not saying that. Nope, you're like, I. She is just very matter of fact. And then as soon as she gets voted out, she's like, I put two on you, everybody, you're great. No, Jeff, don't do it. Like, just completely animated. Like, she got possessed by something. According to Drea, that's just the way that she, like, always acted. And for whatever reason, the edit made her out to be that way. Liana, what is your reaction to that? Is that something you appreciate that we got that out of Drea? Would you want to see more of happy-go-lucky Drea?
That's interesting, because it even felt like not just the confessionals, but even the camp life. Like when Marianne was talking about losing her toenail and Drea's like, I don't understand. Very just monotone. Okay, so wait, so that's not the way that she acts normally? I mean, I was very taken with Drea from the preseason. I thought that she was going to be a really interesting character either way. So now it's interesting to see this like two sides of Drea, you know, whatever maybe the edit made her out to be, versus, you know, that, like you said, that ending final scene where she's just so jovial. I don't know which one is real now.
I sort of remembered that she was funny in like the first episode. I sort of remembered that there was like some, when we were first starting to get to know them, I had a memory of like, oh, I kind of remember her joking around before the stakes are so huge. So, maybe I just imagined it, or maybe I could sometimes read that monotone was coming from like a place of deep comfort of her being like, I can talk to this like goofball this way of like, no one understands what you're talking about. Like, you know what I mean? I think I saw the humor behind it. And I saw like glimpses of her dry sense of humor. I always found her very funny. Mm-hmm. And so I was like happy to see that sometimes that humor can be a little sillier and not just dry. I always thought she was funny. And in my mind, I might have just invented it, but I was like, right, I feel like when we first met her, they let us see a few things of her being like, not as goofy as her final moment, but like a mm-hmm. little cheeky, a little like, that it didn't seem like left field to me, but it did certainly seem like, oh, this is probably what she is when she's, not carrying this adrenaline anymore. Mm-hmm. Or like, this is what she is now that she has this like release. Yeah, I thought she was a really great player. She's a player I would love to see come back. Really, really great. And had so many, like, don't you remember when she was like talking about all of her advantages? She was like, she was playing it. Like she was just like, and I got this and I got this. Like, she's very funny to me the whole time. Silly was a different side. But I always found her super funny. I loved her, like, get to the point.
Yeah, I love it. Like, she does have that DJAF attitude, like, again, from the very beginning. And I totally agree. I think that's what the show wants to see in a returnee, especially from the risk-taking perspective. To your point, I think she is now the new face of, like, the Beware advantage, the specifically, like, the don't give an F about the Beware advantage of, like, yeah, I saw this, it said Beware, yeah, I'm gonna open it. And I think that's what Jeff's like, that's how you play Survivor, that's what you do. And so I think her sort of serving as the forefront of that, in addition to being such a motivating force for the season, I think would merit some sort of return, I would imagine, depending on, like, if we get three more Dreas after this, you know, maybe that lessens her chances. But I do feel like if I'm looking back on this season already, I gotta feel like she's at least, like, top three most likely to be called back.
100%. Like, unless, if for some reason Omer doesn't make final three, she would be my number one pick to come back. So good. I think she's really compelling. And I will say that I do think this was a benefit of Do or Die, is I think it made people feel like one tick off the gas and be a little bit more creative with what that move was going to be. Like, I wonder if that big of a move had happened if they weren't just, like, pontificating every angle of, like, well, let's game down Lindsay getting it, not getting it. Maybe they would, because they're just at that time and they are good players. But I think it gave them a little bit of room to be a little more creative, even if it was subconsciously, because they're like, well, it also might just be nothing, you know, like, I don't know. I think it made that, whereas I feel like with, in 41 with Deshaun, I feel like people were a little bit more like, I think that it's just going to be Deshaun, and their move felt a little bit scrambly. I might be misremembering that, but that was at least maybe how it didn't feel as clicked in as this one was, where they were like, multiple people were saying, if it's this, then it's this, then it's this, then it's this, and being able to see it way down the line. Maybe they would have, because they're good players, but I don't know. Do or Die might have helped that a little bit.
I wonder if that's kind of a thing that happens sometimes when players win individual immunity. They are like, okay, I'm safe. So let me just sort of brainstorm or take a big move.
Well,
or
I mean, that's what Jonathan did with the Tory boot, right? Like, let's flash back to when Drea could have gone. That's exactly, he's like, I'm safe now, so let me start walking around and doing some strategy things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so I wonder if that mental burden is alleviated to a certain extent, because you can think like, okay, well, we got to do this first. So then let's just like take some time to think about what could really happen. Although it was Lindsay who came up with the plan to steal Mike's idol, and she was the one who would have been going home potentially. So it was funny that even though she was the one who was at risk, she was still also willing to play strategy, right? But maybe that is like, well, because she could have been safe. So it does sort of take away part of that immediate pressure of knowing, you know, 1000% you have to go to tribal council and you have to vote somebody out. You have this sort of option that like it may or may not happen. So let's play a little bit more.
That's, I think, what I mean is like, I think it gave everybody a little bit more sense of play, because they were just like, this is wild. Let's embrace it. And I think that, but again, that comes back to casting. I think like that's their ownership of this moment, versus another cast might be like, Lindsay's definitely, and obviously now if they do it again, people will have seen it. So I don't know, it's very interesting, but I thought that it made for, those moves were amazing, and they were so, and everybody, Drea was right. I think that was good timing on her part to do it. didn't work out, but I feel like everyone was right. Like, it was so cool.
Mm-hmm. I really love the fact that knowledge is power was dismantled like the car that is this podcast two seasons in a row now. We're like, because ironically enough, knowledge was spread about the knowledge is power and then took those players to dismantle it. And I really do want to give kudos to Omer and Lindsay. You can say what you want to about, like, should they have taken Mike Seidel and then voted Mike out? You know, we can sort of quibble about that maybe at another time. But I just love their ingenuity to, like, it only probably took them, what, like a few hours for them to find out about something that has never happened in the game before and then say, no, wait a minute. If Mike Seidel technically isn't on him, he can't give it to her. And I think that was just a very, very fun move. And, you know, now we've seen a different version of it. The first time it was that Xander had given the idol to someone else and, like, made a fake idol. Mike didn't go that far necessarily, but I do like this. I hope knowledge is power gets brought in another season where maybe idols are not as much public knowledge, where, like, there is some fun mystery as to, okay, I think this person has an advantage, so I'll ask for it. But two times out of two, I think we've produced really fun moments as a result.
Mm-hmm. And while they're starving also, for them to be able to come up with those creative solutions, it's like, I don't even know if I would think of that, like, fully rested and fed. So props to the game players. I mean, they're out there, like, they're doing the damn thing. It's very impressive.
Yeah. So Liana, you talked about Drea, you know, certainly being a character in the preseason. If I recall correctly, I believe when you all did that RJP podcaster draft, she was part of Team Liana. So let's see if it reflects in your preseason predictions. Did you have high hopes, not the person, for Drea?
Yeah, I love that Omer did a Mike is high on high, because I thought of you, Mike.
I felt so seen.
A high pun. Okay, so for Drea, I had her as making the jury. I said that after Roxroy was taken out, Drea can't find a crack back in the merge tribe, and she is consistently targeted. But she wins two individual immunities in a row to save herself. The second she loses, she's gone. Overall, she would win three individual immunities. I said she would go to Shipwheel Island, but she would not risk her vote. I said she doesn't play her shot in the dark. Her ally was Roxroy, and her enemy was Jenny / Omer, because they're like the power duo in my theoretical season.
What could have been if Jenny had stayed?
Wow.
This whole game would have been different. All right, so for mine, I forget if we've talked about this, Jess, when you were in the podcast. So there is a website called Brant Steele that simulates Survivor seasons for you if you plug in the people. And so I, much like we do nowadays, submitted myself to the hands of AI to help me take the wheel here, do or die in its own way, shape, and form. And they simulated the entire season for me. And so unfortunately, Drea, poor Drea, round up in pre-jury in this simulation. She found an idol, which she did find an idol, which she ended up playing on the very first tribal council that she could. And I do believe that she actually was going home that night. So she was able to, like, successfully idol someone out. She gets in a fight with Romeo, and then she gets targeted the very next round and gets voted off by everybody but Tori. I said her closest ally was Tori and her biggest enemy was Romeo. And I also did, in honor of those wacky catchphrases that you spoke about, Jess, did randomly generate a phrase for each player. And Drea's phrase was, do you think this is too big?
Oh,
I think
that's
it makes
amazing.
Sense, though.
Yeah.
She's a big player. She takes a lot
of
risk.
Do you think that my move is too big? I could see her. Yeah, this is too big. That's really amazing. Wow. Wow.
So it's all on Simulators. You now. Do or die, Jess. Pick one of these two boxes.
What? Pick fire?
You have to pick who had the better predictions.
Oh, Liana.
God damn it.
I mean, I had jury. Come on, Mike.
Yeah. She made it further.
But
sure.
I had her hit phrase, do you think this is too big?
That's true. That's true.
Her classic catchphrase that we all remember.
It's on the t-shirts.
I think she's also a much more, she ended up being a much more flexible player. Like, I don't think of, she's not really like one ally, one enemy. She's more like some allies, some people who now I'm less inclined to play with. You know, she was very, I also feel like she was just not in a great way. She didn't get like stuck in like, well, this is my, I must do it this way.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely felt very fluid. I think even from the early episodes of her then creating the Women's Alliance, or, you know, wanting to make sure that she was in good with them, and then also covering her bases with the Roxroy Romeo, you know, relationships. And so yeah. I think she was definitely someone who was not tied to anything and totally willing to play fluidly.
And I think everybody likes her. So mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, and everybody respects her. So I feel like she just sort of hit that level really well. Whereas I think that the reason High went out is that he started to show that he was liking being the king a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting to compare, because you could argue, like, okay, it's High and Drea, like two of the biggest players got taken out one right after the other. But to your point, I think it's for two very different reasons. Like mm-hmm. for High, I think we got a lot of comments about him that were like, he's getting cocky, he's making these comments, etc. But with Drea, I mean, we had something else I really loved about the sequence, like a relay race where the baton was Drea, and they're like, man, I don't want Drea to win because, you know, she's going to be a threat in the final three. Pass it off to Jonathan. Like, well, I want to vote out Drea because I think she's great in challenges. And they just came up with all these, I guess, positive reasons. It's an ultimate negative result because she gets voted out. But, like, I think bigger reasons as to her being a threat to their game staying in versus High, which, again, maybe because it was clouded in someone like Mike who had more of a personal vendetta against him. But it was more about, like, High sticking up out front and less so about, like, well, he's going to win the game if he gets to the end.
Yeah. I think it was just too many people were like, I can't let High run the game versus if Drea gets to the end, she'll win the game. Mm-hmm. Now, I think people still thought, well, people might respect that ultimately if High can get to the end. But I think you just get to that point where you don't want to feel like you're crowded out of making moves. And so I think people were like, we got to get High out. Otherwise, he's going to play it like, I'm brought along, you know, he's going to be able to say this story of being in charge the whole time, which I think everyone's like, well, can't have that. Get him out of here. But yeah, the only thing that Drea did that I don't like is I don't really like when players are gone and sort of continue to play.
The speech stuff after. Yeah.
The spirit of her exit speech. I loved the moment with her and Mike. I loved all the stuff with her and Jeff. But my friend Petra and I are like, yeah, you can't keep playing. You can't be like, let me go and reveal that it's all like, let me say every move that happened and sort of still inform the game. Feels a little like, and also, like, you did put a kiss of death on Mike. Like, and not that I think it's anything new. Everybody's like, yeah, people really like Mike. He's a threat. Like, I don't think it will actually change anything, but I think in general, I don't like people like playing the game after that point.
Yeah, but to your point about Mike, has it gotten so meta when people do that they're like, yeah, but it doesn't matter. You know, like, yeah. I don't know how, I would be surprised, honestly, if any minds were changed by Dry. Now, the Omer stuff might be different because then people are like, oh my God, he might have been up to something. But yeah, I personally feel like, while I really love the Drea thing, I mean, in general, I like when things get changed up with this temperament. You know, I don't want everyone to be like, F you, I hate you all, I'm going to burn down the camp. I also don't want everybody to be like, good job, gang, you're all fantastic. And so this was a little bit different, but I do, to your point, I don't want this to be the you know, the new normal where someone's going through and just like Michael Scott style being like, you, we had a final three. You have an idol, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like play them off a little bit, yeah?
Right, like if someone was, yeah, like if people feel like they can just reveal secrets at that point, I feel like, no, I guess you're not, your fire isn't snuffed yet, but it feels like you shouldn't be playing the game anymore and you shouldn't be influencing in the same way that they don't want the jury to talk, right? Like as they're sitting over there, they're supposed to silently be watching versus like sometimes when they get too chatty, it is a little like, no. I don't think now it's still, I love the human component. That's what makes Survivor great, right? If I'm saying something at Tribal and I watch three people in the jury roll their eyes at me, then I'm certainly going to adjust that move because now I'm courting them, right? Like as soon as they're over there, I'm trying to present myself at Tribal to make sure I eventually get their votes. So I get it. You're going to read their human emotion. You're going to watch when people think a move is cool and be like, try to send the signs of like, that was me. Like you like what I'm doing. You see me high. You like this. Because hopefully what you want is like, as soon as those people get over there, which obviously we know sometimes they don't, sometimes they go get over there and they continue to hold a grudge. And then they use their whole question to just be mean. But I mean, ideally they should be like progressively getting more removed and more like, okay, great. Let me look at this objectively, as objectively as possible. Mm-hmm. So I feel like she's on the jury at that point. You shouldn't be blowing up like who told what to whom, a little bit, but other than that, no notes. She's great.
No, high octane. That's my feedback.
High octane. Is this too big? No, it's not.
Yeah, I wonder, out of all the things she said, the Omer one is the one that really, I think, could do the most damage after this, especially if someone like who thought that they were close to Omer. So Lindsay knew about it, right? So Lindsay's probably going to feel good because, okay, Omer, Lindsay, they're tight. But what about, and Mike obviously will feel good, but what about everybody else? You know, what about someone like Marianne, who is someone who's worked really closely with Omer, and you might feel slighted that she wasn't told about this. And then, of course, you also have the Mike comment where it's, you know, oh, Mike's going to win the game. Although High was a little bit like on the jury. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know who that is.
To counter your point a little bit, though, like, I do wonder if Drea hadn't said anything and they get back to camp and the question is like, oh, Mike, how did you know about that? Like, I still think there's at least a fairly good chance that Mike says, well, Omer told me. So, like, mm-hmm. the information, there's a chance the information might still be out there, but there's also, it might not help as the jury stuff as well, mm-hmm. right? Like, they might have a certain respect for it if he does make it to the end, but also if it turns out things like, you know, maybe that starts to get High's wheels spinning of like, wait a minute, so Omer did this, could Omer have done the thing turning Mike against me? And while he might have respect for that, it may have played almost to the jury in a more impactful way than the players themselves.
Hmm. Yeah, I wonder now we have previews that there's a lot of goat talk in this mm-hmm. upcoming episode. I wonder if part of that will be like, I'm looking around and the things that were called out certainly seem to put into relief who people think are the power players mm-hmm. and who are not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always so interesting. The fact that people have to play low key for a while is a very hard thing to navigate. But like they do.
Yeah.
I think it's such a tough balance because you have to still play low key enough to not be perceived as too much of a threat, but also you still want to be in control and directing the game to have the people around you that, you know, you want to work with. It's right. Tough. Okay. So I have prepared a little game for Ooh. You both that we're going to play. So this will talk about, you know, some of the events in the episode so we can dive into them if we want. But the way this game is going to work is it is the Survivor Limerick Challenge. So
is
essentially,
it fun?
Is it fun? It's dangerous.
Oh, no.
And I know.
You lose a toenail for everyone you get wrong.
Exactly. Okay. No, thankfully, no toenails being lost here. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a Survivor-related limerick with the last word or phrase missing from each. So if you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, then you'll earn a point and I'll go back and forth between the two of you. So the rhyming structure is A-A-B-B-A. That helps. So Mike,
I'm gonna say just confidently nods like, yeah, I got this. I make up rhymes literally every week of my life.
Yeah, it's fine. All right. So, Mike, we're going to go ahead and we're going to start with you. So here is your first limerick. Last week, Mike was in fight mode, taking out his targets as the votes flowed. Did you hear that sound? Something's been found. That's High's head rolling down the...
Just road, I'm pretty sure is what he said. It wouldn't be like railroad.
No, it was road. That was the quote. Yes. Yeah. So Mike had that confessional at the beginning where he was like chopping off the heads. That's the sound of High's head rolling down the road. Like, what? I'm sorry.
A lot of guillotine talk. His head's on the guillotine.
Yeah, she's a firefighter, but like he might be an executioner on the side.
Mm-hmm. He just like loves French history.
Yeah. I mean, he loves literature. He quotes Romeo and Juliet this episode, which if you lined up the cast in front of me and said, order who's most likely to quote Romeo and Juliet, Mike would honestly probably be at number 18. So I love seeing it from him.
I'm telling you, there's more to Mike. Mike's great. Mike's excellent casting.
Yeah, he's definitely a quote machine. Like he's just all over the place. Like there was one in this episode, I didn't end up writing a limerick for it, but he was like, boom, 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 like dominoes right in a row. 5 days left. I could do it going backwards with my eyes closed. I was like, yeah, Mike, you get it.
Yes, Mike.
Yes, Mike. Yes. The ossification of Mike. Okay, Jess, this is your limerick. Okay. The tribe sat around the fire telling tales when something went off the rails. An annual amount? Too many to count. Marianne keeps losing her
nails, toenails.
I
know, again, I tweeted about this, but obviously Marianne was like the big to do in this, but I do love Lindsay's an annual amount. Mm-hmm. Jess, it was very much like straight man behavior in an improv scene, right? Of just like completely incredulous about Marianne being so nonchalant with it.
What are you talking about? An annual amount. It was, yeah, that was tough.
Yeah, and just like because they were all sitting there chit-chatting, and then all of a sudden, Marianne's like, I lost my toenail. Like, what? Sorry.
Do you think it's going to be like the Survivor Token Sheens reunion where Jeff's going to say, like, Marianne, we found your toenail. Here it is.
Ew.
The zoom-in shot of it was just like, ooh.
Not necessary.
Nope.
All right, Mike, we're going back to you. Romeo still hasn't moved from his spot somehow, just chomping on the rice like a good little cow. Sitting by the tree, Mike asks, wherefore he be? By the rice pot is where Romeo.
Oh, interesting. Well, I just got hung up on eating rice like a good little cow.
Okay, Romeo, I'll reread it. Romeo still hasn't moved from his spot somehow, just chomping on the rice like a good little cow. Sitting by the tree, Mike asks wherefore he be. By the rice pot is where Romeo.
Oh, art thou? Okay, now I understand. Yes. Because I believe that's what Mike literally says, right?
Yes.
Like, wherefore art thou, Romeo? By the freaking pot, Romeo, art thou?
Yes.
Really?
And look,
good.
Listen, I would not be a good theater kid if I did not this and say that wherefore does mean why. It does not define a location perspective. So I
was
going to
do the same thing. I was right there with you. She's asking, why must you be Romeo? Why must you be Romeo?
Well,
you can't be together. Why must you be a Montague? He made up words. He made up words all the time.
Okay, well, maybe you guys can school Mike. Mike, in your exit interview, can you please, like, that can be one of the questions.
Oh, even if he wins, that'll be the first thing I'll be like, well, you know, let me give you a little lesson here. Let me talk to you about the bard.
All right, so we're going in. Jessica, Jess, this is all for you. Mike has 2 points. You have 1 point. Jonathan's complaining makes him the outsider. The division between him and Lindsay grows wider. He just aims to please, but nobody sees that he only wants to be the
provider.
Oh, Jonathan, it's so hard being Jonathan.
Why aren't I getting more thank yous for being the provider?
Wherefore am I not getting so much feedback?
Oh my gosh. I was like, nobody sees how hard it is for me. After everything I do, I hate to be told that, oh, you could help Jonathan. Okay, Jonathan. He doesn't have his eggs and his cheese, I guess.
Yeah, his brain is really missing his 5,000 to 6,000 calories.
Yeah. It's fried. Okay.
It's like those eggs.
Two to two. We're going into our last two limericks. Mike, this one is for you. Tribal council was lit for the gods after Lindsay had beaten the odds. But which plan would win out? There's all kinds of doubt when you rely on the winks and
the nods.
Yes. Yes. Nods, head nods. I would have accepted either. That is correct.
This is a little, I don't know if this is a hot take, because like I've been really liking this season. But this season in particular, I have really felt the time on Tribal Council. Like, it just, honestly, to me, it feels like a little bit of empty talk. It felt this way, actually, in this particular episode of just, like, Jeff being like, now let's hold on for a second and focus on what do winks and nods mean? It feels like there's a producer off camera being like, a stretch, come on, like, give me 10 more minutes. For whatever reason, maybe to your point, Jess, it's like the same things are happening over and over again, or they can be that, like, there are fewer topics of conversation. But I've just been feeling it this season for whatever reason.
I think that's fair. I've had a couple like pause on the episode and been like, whoa, 22 minutes left and we're at Tribal. But yeah, I mean, it is typically my favorite part, but I agree. They've been a little episode heavy. They were a little large in the relation chunk.
I think also with a lot of super fans or people that are familiar with the game, they now have a better understanding of the art of Tribal Council, which is you need to be able to respond without really saying, you need to give Jeff enough so he'll leave you alone, but you also don't want to give anything away. And so I feel like Omer is especially like so good at this, where he's able to say so much, but also says like nothing.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the thing is like, and the other thing as well, and Jesse pointed this out about timing is like, when you see there's 10 minutes left and Lindsay does the do or die, you got to be like, we're not getting a 7-minute Lindsay montage sent to like Bad Day by Daniel Powder. Like she's on American Idol.
That's tough. There's nothing you can do about that. But it was like, oh, she survives. You know it immediately seeing how much time is left for sure.
Yeah. All right, Jess, this is for you. Drea finding all the advantages takes nerve. As a hard worker, it's what she deserves. But at Tribal Council that night, she gave the tribe quite a fright when she says she just sits around and...
observes.
Yes, I observe. You go to the water well, I observe.
Observe. That's funny. She's funny.
That was the entire like onus of this. I was talking with Liana, and for some reason, like the way she spoke about it almost felt like poetry to me, and so we thought it'd be a good week to do limericks. Like it did feel like something I would see on the New York subway written in like one of those little placards of like Drea Wheeler, I observe.
100%. Like she's like very TV ready. You know, like some people are great on this. Some people are great on reality TV because they're like, how does this person absolutely forget that there's a camera here? Like, how is this person being so themselves? And I think we see less and less and less of that on Survivor because it's people understand and they understand the types of things they're supposed to say in an interview because they've watched 1,000 of them and they understand like, well, I'll help, you know, and we always get, there's certain people each season who are such game heads. They're great at narrating the rest of the game for the audience. And you can just see the producer off camera being like, can we get a little more from you because you help explain this to the audience and you're very valuable in that way. And she is just like, I think it's just her personality. I don't think she's doing anything consciously of like making herself be packaged for television. I'm just like, she is TV ready. Like you can put her in these moments. She can narrate these beats. She can like speak in poetry. She's just like, she's great.
Yeah. She can give her one woman show.
Honestly, that's one of the reasons why, and besides just like the way she plays, that's why I would want her back on a season. I think she's like a very important ingredient to why this season has been good in that way as well.
Is there another environment you would want to see her in?
I was just going to say, I'd watch her on different kinds of reality shows, honestly.
She could be someone on The Challenge, maybe.
Oh,
she's like very fitnessy, right? So that's kind of like her, that would be a good fit.
Yeah, I would say she is married, but I would love to see her in like a bachelorette style or a bachelor type of thing where she just like has no guff for any
Me
of that.
Me too. BS. Well, I would love to see her on Love Island because we get so much more content. Mm-hmm. So I think like if you, or like I don't watch Big Brother, but a similar like where there's just so much more footage, because then I think we would have known all of these sides of her personality more. And we would have been like, oh my gosh, she's such a good hang. And she would just be so, do you watch Love Island?
I usually watch like the first few weeks, but it just gets to be so many episodes.
It does get to be so much. But I love when there's like when there's a cast member who is a little bit more like the older sister energy of corralling everybody else and being like, you're being ridiculous, or like going out and calling out the guys of like, how dare you talk to them this way? And I feel like she would be invaluable in that role. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I know she's married and you can't just put her on a dating show, but like, that's actually what I would love to see her on, because it would be so much more content of mm-hmm. like getting to see all the different angles.
Yeah. In a different environment.
Liana, how do you think Drea would do? Because like Jessica now got my mind percolating. I feel like between like all the one-on-one deals she was making and like all the powers she was finding, do you actually feel like she would be conducive for a show like that?
For Love Island?
No, I'm sorry, for Big Brother.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay. For Big Brother. Oh, man. I don't know. I think the thing is that because she was like going after everything very intense, and Big Brother, you have to just totally chill out. Like, you have so much downtime and you can't be playing all the time. I have no evidence to base this on, but she strikes me as someone who could do that. So I would be optimistic that she would be able to handle it. But at the same time, I just worry about all that downtime, especially because she's someone who is like high energy and is like doing a lot, that would start to drain on her. And we could see her flame out in like the first month.
I will say her exit reminded me a lot of a Big Brother eviction. Right. Mm-hmm. Where like you get to hug people, you get to like say things, especially Big Brother Canada gets to do the whole like RuPaul's Drag Race esque, like get to the top of the stairs, say your exit line, and then go through the doors.
Yeah. 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 She could have. What was the line? That's a big one. That's too big. That's not big enough.
What was it? Is that too big?
It's not too big.
Is that too big?
It's not too big.
And then she walks out with no answer.
I haven't watched in a while, but I feel like she'd also be so good at Amazing Race, but there's less. I think just because she would have like the stamina and breadth of skills to be good at it, but you would lose the side of the like mind game part. I know there's like little bits of that in that game, but not as much.
Maybe mind games with her teammate, but I think she'd have to race with Marianne. I think they'd just be the perfect pair together.
No. Oh my gosh. That would be, you know, they travel such a great revealer. Everyone's like, before you get married, go on a big trip. And like, sometimes you discover there are certain friends you can't really go on trips with. Marianne would be a very tough travel partner. Very, very tough. Especially like, you have to get up at 4 a.m. and she's already like talking 1,000 miles a minute. I would be like, I just need you to stop.
I need coffee. Shut your mouth.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like such a beautifully sensitive soul that you wouldn't be able to tell her that. You know, you could never be like, I need you to shut up.
And yeah, she'd be like, oh my God, you won't believe it. I'm down to 2 toenails now.
And I'd be like, we're running through the streets of Berlin.
Yeah, how many toenails survive? Like, so much moleskin will be needed.
Yeah, that'd be tough. That'd be tough.
All right, well, congratulations to both of you. It is a tie, as I do not have a tiebreaker. So you both did fabulous. So much fun. I guess technically Jess will win because I'd repeat one for Mike because he got too caught up in the cow line. So if you want to be technical about it, we'll give it to Jess. But in the spirit of fun and
because
games,
your writing was so weird that I had to ask for it to be said again, I lost.
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah, listen, I observe.
See?
There you go. You truly have the powers of observation. Well, that being said, we would love to observe something that you're going to bring to light for us. We do this every week on the B&B. We ask our guests to bring up a charity or a cause that exists outside of this little Fiji-based bubble that is Survivor and Survivor discussion, to highlight something that we should look upon and possibly donate to as an audience. So I will throw it to you here. We'll do that steady cam pan that you love so much right over to you. What charity or cause do you want to highlight this week, Jess?
Thank you so much. So I'd love to shout out Sela, which is a neighborhood homeless coalition in Los Angeles that does really incredible work. I've volunteered with them a few times. They are like very in neighborhoods that need help, and they're an incredible organization. And you can find out more about them at Sela, which is SELAHNHC.org. You can just search Sela. It's like a neighborhood abbreviation. SELAH. And it's very LA specific. So I encourage you to find something similar in your own neck of the woods. But if you're in the LA area and you haven't heard of Sela yet, they're incredible. Or if you aren't in the LA area and you want to check them out and see if they have something similar, if there's something similar in your area, then I'd really encourage you to do so.
Well, thank you for talking about Sela, and it was so great to see you. not the musical artist. It was really great to have you on. I mean, when we had you on last time, the world, all of us felt like it was a very different place and time. So it's nice to have you come back on after so long. And it feels like, you know, just like riding a bike again, a high octane bike, to talk all about Survivor.
Thank you for having me.
So I know that you obviously have a lot going on. If people want to check out everything else that you're doing that is not involving Survivor, how can people follow you on social media and check out any other times they might want to have you in their ears?
Off Book is the name of my podcast. We improvise a musical, and you can listen to that wherever podcasts are. Off Book, the improvised musical podcast. And then you can follow me on Instagram, I would say. My Twitter feed is full of, I was going to say dust bunnies. That's not what I want to say. Why can't I think of the word for the things?
Like tumbleweeds?
Tumbleweeds. Thank you. So I'm at Jess McKenna on Instagram. Jess twice. Jess McKenna.
And I suppose, like, I'm saving, you know, a question I should have asked in the first minute for the last minute. How have you been doing? How have the past few years been on you?
Mike, we don't have the time. No. I'm doing well, thanks. I host the podcast with my writing partner, comedy partner, Zach Reno, and we write all kinds of things of music and comedy intersection. We wrote for a show last year. Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman have their show Making It, where they people make crafts at a craft competition show. And for Peacock, there was a holiday spinoff, Baking It, with Maya Rudolph and Andy Samberg. And Zach and I got to write for that show, which was really fun. And because they wanted it to feel sort of different and play to the strengths of those hosts and celebrate the holiday season, we wrote a lot of like music for that show. So as ridiculous as it is that it is a baking show, we somehow like kept squeezing in like getting to write silly songs for Andy and Maya, which was obviously a dream. We're doing stuff like that, and Instagram's a good way to follow if I'm announcing something like that is happening. But it was very funny to like write for a baking show and be like, "What are you writing?" And we're like, "A weird song about how Maya loves pie."
I love that. That's so fun.
Yeah, you can watch it on Peacock. I mean, you might want to wait till Christmas if you're like me and you can't watch Christmas stuff when it's not Christmas time. But
We're coming up. Christmas is July, so if you want to get it in a little bit
earlier. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Liana, what do you have in the oven coming up?
Yes, well, Drag Race is back. It was a very brief few weeks, but...
I was going to say, like, wait, we just went to sleep. Now you have to wake up again?
Well, I mean, if you stay ready, you don't got to get ready. So I'm not ready, but it's this Friday. So we're going to be recording episodes on the weekends. I think most likely we're going to record on Friday nights for the next couple weeks. But yeah, All Stars 7 is here. They've been doing so much promo for it. So, you know, they're really hyping up the season. So fingers crossed, it's going to be a good one. And those episodes are releasing on Paramount Plus. So just keep that in mind. They're not going to be on VH1. And then Puyi and I are wrapping up The Masked Singer. So we have the finale left this coming week, and then we're done with that. And then Mike, you're going to be over with Rob. So next week for the B&B, it's going to be double date night. My wonderful partner Puyi will be here to fill in for Mike, and we're going to have Jenny and Phil, couple extraordinaire, in with us to do a bunch of shenanigans while Mike is gone.
Oh my god, I love it. I love giving the keys to this jalopy over to Liana for an episode. Yeah, as Liana said, I'll be doing my usual penultimate feedback show with Rob, which should be very fun and probably filled with its own amount of shenanigans, probably multi hours considering what we're getting into. I'm also talking with Rob. I'm talking with him actually tonight at the time of recording this, because I'll be on Nothing But Netflix this week to talk The Pentaveret, which, for those that might not know, is Mike Myers' glorious return to live action. I watched all 6 episodes, and it is something. So we'll have a lot to talk about.
Quite the endorsement. Wow.
It is something.
I mean, if you listen, I will say multiple Mike Myers characters from the past make cameos is I will say. I cannot spoil it because it is some of the most ridiculous shit I've seen in my life. But it's 6 half-hour episodes. If you want to check it out, I was also on talking more Netflix stuff. I was on the Circle podcast this past weekend talking with Taryn and Sasha. That is more than halfway over. And actually coming up this week, I'll be doing exit press with some Circle people. I'm doing it with like basically all the players that are left. So as they're eliminated, I'm putting out interviews with them. I just talked about the interview that I did with Drea. Very fun up at parade.com. I'll be interviewing the sixth place player as well. And then over on post show recaps, it is hopping as much as Drea was hopping around after she was eliminated. I'm talking Stranger Things season 2. I'm talking Barry season 3. I'm going down the hatch with Josh Wigler. And then this week I'm launching, believe it or not, brand new coverage of a show. The Boys is coming to Amazon Prime on season 3 is coming on June 3rd. And I get to talk about it with Kevin Mahadeo. He of superhero coverage on Pusher Recap. I've been rewatching it. We're putting out rewatch podcasts, one per season. Holy crap, that show is like gratuitous, but like incredible. So if you like, if you watch the show, if you want to check out the show, we do a little bit of like a primer as to what it is and whether or not it would be for you. You can check that out. Some Obi-Wan stuff is coming since that's coming out. Like there are way too many things happening right now in the TV landscape. And I count myself lucky to be able to come on and like talk nonsense into this thing for hours at a time. And I hope you all enjoy it as well. Especially, you know, for all the various guests that we have on, Jess included.
It's so much TV. I have a list. It's so much.
Yeah.
I think that's how you have to live nowadays. I can't imagine anyone living in that chaos of like, I'll just flip and see what's on. Like, I don't know if those people exist anymore.
Can you imagine?
If you're just tuning in to Survivor.
Wow.
Oh my God, don't get me started on that. All right, so next week, as Liana said, while the mic's away, the couples will play in the form of Liana, Puya, Jenny, and Phil. Should be a lot of fun. I'm sad to have missed it, but I will be over on the Daddy Podcast, I think as Kirsten and Sasha have recently coined it, with Rob to talk through the penultimate episode of Survivor 42. Cannot believe we are almost at an end here, but we are having so much fun. If you have game ideas, again, we've been receptive of them all season long. You can email us, rhapbnb@gmail.com, or tweet us using hashtag rhapbnb. Special thanks to Scott C. and Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes. Wolf from America for that fantastic theme song. Liana will be back next week with Puya, Jenny, and Phil. Until then.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-N-B.